Chapter 4. Engaging ways of children. Saunders, why don't you get married? Apostrophe now, this is an embarrassing question, because Mr. Saunders has been thinking that if he had at any time entertained matrimonial designs, the revelation of that day would surely have routed them forever. I am glad, however, apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler, that you are a bachelor, glad on one account, Saunders. A selfish one, I admit. Will you do Mrs. Whiffler and myself a favor? Apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Saunders is surprised, evidently surprised. But he replies, with the greatest pleasure. Apostrophe then, will you, Saunders? Apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler, in an impressive manner, will you cement and consolidate our friendship by coming into the family, so to speak, as a godfather? Apostrophe apostrophe I shall be proud and delighted, apostrophe replies Mr. Saunders. Which of the children is it? Really, I thought they were all christened. Or apostrophe Saunders, apostrophe Mr. Whiffler interposes, they are all christened. You are right. The fact is, that Mrs. Whiffler is in short, we expect another. Apostrophe not a ninth. Apostrophe cries the friend, all aghast at the idea. Yes, Saunders, apostrophe rejoins Mr. Whiffler, solemnly, a ninth. Did we drink Mrs. Whiffler's health? Let us drink it again, Saunders, and wish her well over it. Apostrophe apostrophe, Dr. Johnson used to tell a story of a man who had but one idea, which was a wrong one. The couple who dote upon their children are in the same predicament. At home or abroad, at all times, and in all places, their thoughts are bound up in this one subject, and have no sphere beyond. They relate the clever things their offspring say or do, and weary every company with their prolixity and absurdity. Mr. Whiffler takes a friend by the button at a street corner on a windy day, to tell him a bon mot of his youngest boys, and Mrs. Whiffler, calling to see a sick acquaintance, entertains her with a cheerful account of all her own past sufferings and present expectations. In such cases the sins of the fathers indeed descend upon the children, for people soon come to regard them as predestined little bores. The couple who dote upon their children cannot be said to be actuated by a general love for these engaging little people, which would be a great excuse, for they are apt to underrate and entertain a jealousy of any children but their own. If they examined their own hearts, they would, perhaps, find at the bottom of all this, more self-love and egotism than they think of. Self-love and egotism are bad qualities, of which the unrestrained exhibition, though it may be sometimes amusing, never fails to be wearisome and unpleasant. Couples who dote upon their children, therefore, are best avoided. The cool couple. There is an old-fashioned weather glass representing a house with two doorways, in one of which is the figure of a gentleman, in the other the figure of a lady. When the weather is to be fine, the lady comes out and the gentleman goes in. When wet, the gentleman comes out and the lady goes in. They never seek each other's society, are never elevated and depressed by the same cause, and have nothing in common. They are the model of a cool couple, except that there is something of politeness and consideration about the behavior of the gentleman in the weather glass, in which neither of the cool couple can be said to participate. The cool couple are seldom alone together, and when they are, nothing can exceed their apathy and dullness, the gentleman being for the most part drowsy, and the lady silent. If they enter into conversation, it is usually of an ironical or recriminatory nature. Thus, when the gentleman has indulged in a very long yawn, and settled himself more snugly in his easy chair, the lady will perhaps remark, "Well, I am sure, Charles. I hope you're comfortable." Apostrophe to which the gentleman replies, "Oh yes, he's quite comfortable, quite." Apostrophe there are not many married men, I hope, apostrophe returns the lady, who seek comfort in such selfish gratifications as you do. apostrophe nor many wives who seek comfort in such selfish gratifications as you do, I hope, apostrophe retorts the gentleman. Whose fault is that? Apostrophe apostrophe demands the lady. The gentleman, becoming more sleepy, returns no answer. Whose fault is that? Apostrophe the lady repeats. The gentleman still returning no answer, she goes on to say, that she believes there never was in all this world anybody so attached to her home, so thoroughly domestic, so unwilling to seek a moment's gratification or pleasure beyond her own fireside as she. God knows that, before she was married she never thought, or dreamt of such a thing, and she remembers, that her poor papa used to say again and again, almost every day of his life, oh, my dear Louia, if you only marry a man who understands you, and takes the trouble to consider your happiness, and accommodate himself a very little to your disposition, what a treasure he will find in you. Apostrophe apostrophe she supposes her papa knew what her disposition was. He had known her long enough, he ought to have been acquainted with it, but what can she do? If her home is always dull and lonely, and her husband is always absent, and finds no pleasure in her society, she is naturally sometimes driven, seldom enough, she is sure, to seek a little recreation elsewhere. She is not expected to pine, and mope to death, she hopes. Then come, Louia, apostrophe says the gentleman, waking up as suddenly as he fell asleep, stop at home this evening, and so will one. Apostrophe I should be sorry to suppose, Charles, that you took a pleasure in aggravating me, apostrophe replies the lady, but you know as well as I do, that I am particularly engaged to Mrs. Mortimer, and that it would be an act of the grossest rudeness and ill-breeding, after accepting a seat in her box and preventing her from inviting anybody else, not to go. Apostrophe ah. There it is. Apostrophe says the gentleman, shrugging his shoulders, I knew that perfectly well. I knew you couldn't devote an evening to your own home. Now all I have to say, Louia, is this: recollect, that I was quite willing to stay at home, and that it's no fault of mine we are not oftener together. Apostrophe, with that the gentleman goes away, to keep an old appointment at his club, and the lady hurries off to dress for Mrs. Mortimer's, and neither thinks of the other until by some odd chance they find themselves alone again. But it must not be supposed that the cool couple are habitually a quarrelsome one. Quite the contrary. These differences are only occasions for a little self-excuse, nothing more. In general they are as easy and careless, and dispute as seldom, as any common acquaintances may, for it is neither worth their while to put each other out of the way, nor to ruffle themselves. When they meet in society, the cool couple are the best-bred people in existence. The lady is seated in a corner among a little knot of lady friends, one of whom exclaims, Why, I vow and declare there is your husband, my dear. Apostrophe apostrophe whose? Mine? Apostrophe she says, carelessly. Eh, yours, and coming this way too. Apostrophe how very odd. Apostrophe says the lady, in a languid tone, I thought he had been at Dover. Apostrophe the gentleman coming up, and speaking to all the other ladies and nodding slightly to his wife, it turns out, that he has been at Dover, and has just now returned. What a strange creature you are. Apostrophe apostrophe cries his wife, and what on earth brought you here, I wonder. Apostrophe apostrophe I came to look after you, of course, apostrophe rejoins her husband. This is so pleasant a jest, that the lady is mightily amused, as are all the other ladies similarly situated who are within hearing, and while they are enjoying it to the full, the gentleman nods again, turns upon his heel, and saunters away. There are times, however, when his company is not so agreeable, though equally unexpected. Such as when the lady has invited one, or two particular friends to tea and scandal, and he happens to come home in the very midst of their diversion. It is 100 chances to 1 that he remains in the house half an hour, but the lady is rather disturbed by the intrusion, notwithstanding, and reasons within herself, I am sure I never interfere with him, and why should he interfere with me? It can scarcely be accidental. It never happens that I have a particular reason for not wishing him to come home, but he always comes. It's very provoking and tiresome, and I am sure when he leaves me so much alone for his own pleasure, the least he could do would be to do as much for mine. Apostrophe observing what passes in her mind, the gentleman, who has come home for his own accommodation, makes a merit of it with himself, arrives at the conclusion that it is the very last place in which he can hope to be comfortable, and determines, as he takes up his hat and cane, never to be so virtuous again. Thus a great many cool couples go on until they are cold couples, and the grave has closed over their folly and indifference. Loss of name, station, character, life itself, has ensued from causes as slight as these, before now. And when gossips tell such tales, and aggravate their deformities, they elevate their hands and eyebrows, and call each other to witness what a cool couple Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so always were, even in the best of times. The plausible couple have many titles. They are a delightful couple, apostrophe an affectionate couple, a most agreeable couple, a good-hearted couple, apostrophe and the best-natured couple in existence. Apostrophe the truth is, that the plausible couple are people of the world, and either the way of pleasing the world has grown much easier than it was in the days of the old man and his ass, or the old man was but a bad hand at it, and knew very little of the trade. But is it really possible to please the world? ... says some doubting reader. It is indeed. Nay, it is not only very possible, but very easy. The ways are crooked, and sometimes foul and low. What then? A man need but crawl upon his hands and knees, know when to close his eyes, and when his ears, when to stoop, and when to stand upright. And if by the world is meant that atom of it in which he moves himself, he shall please it, never fear. Now, it will be readily seen that if a plausible man or woman have an easy means of pleasing the world by an adaptation of self to all its twistings and twinings, a plausible man and woman, or, in other words, a plausible couple, playing into each other's hands and acting in concert, have a manifest advantage. Hence it is that plausible couples scarcely ever fail of success on a pretty large scale, and hence it is that if the reader, laying down this unwieldy volume at the next full stop, will have the goodness to review his or her circle of acquaintance, and to search particularly for some man and wife with a large connection and a good name, not easily referable to their abilities or their wealth, he or she, that is, the male or female reader, will certainly find that gentleman or lady, on a very short reflection, to be a plausible couple. The plausible couple are the most ecstatic people living, the most sensitive people, to merit on the face of the earth. Nothing clever or virtuous escapes them. They have microscopic eyes for such endowments, and can find them anywhere. The plausible couple never fawn, oh no. They don't even scruple to tell their friends of their faults. One is too generous, another too candid. A third has a tendency to think all people like himself, and to regard mankind as a company of angels. A fourth is kind-hearted to a fault. We never flatter, my dear Mrs. Jackson, apostrophe say the plausible couple, we speak our minds. Neither you nor Mr. Jackson have faults enough. It may sound strangely, but it is true. You have not faults enough. You know our way, we must speak out, and always do. Quarrel with us for saying so, if you will, but we repeat it, you have not faults enough. ... The plausible couple are no less plausible to each other than to third parties. They are always loving and harmonious. The plausible gentleman calls his wife darling, apostrophe, and the plausible lady addresses him as dearest. Apostrophe if it be Mr. and Mrs. Bobtail Widger. Mrs. Widger is Lavinia, darling. Apostrophe and Mr. Widger is Bobtail, dearest. Apostrophe speaking of each other, they observe the same tender form. Mrs. Widger relates what Bobtail said, and Mr. Widger recounts what darling thought and did. If you sit next to the plausible lady at a dinner table, she takes the earliest opportunity of expressing her belief that you are acquainted with the Clickets. She is sure she has heard the Clickets speak of you. She must not tell you in what terms, or you will take her for a flatterer. You admit a knowledge of the Clickets. The plausible lady immediately launches out in their praise. She quite loves the Clickets. Were there ever such true-hearted, hospitable, excellent people, such a gentle, interesting little woman as Mrs. Clickett, or such a frank, unaffected creature as Mr. Clickett? Were there ever two people, in short, so little spoiled by the world as they are? As who, darling? Apostrophe cries Mr. Widger, from the opposite side of the table. The Clickets, dearest, apostrophe replies Mrs. Widger. Indeed you are right, darling, apostrophe Mr. Widger rejoins. The Clickets are a very high-minded, worthy, estimable couple. Apostrophe Mrs. Widger remarking that Bobtail always grows quite eloquent upon this subject. Mr. Widger admits that he feels very strongly whenever such people as the Clickets and some other friends of his, here he glances at the host and hostess, are mentioned. For they are an honor to human nature, and do one good to think of. You know the Clickets, Mrs. Jackson? Apostrophe he says, addressing the lady of the house. No, indeed, we have not that pleasure, apostrophe she replies. You astonish me, apostrophe exclaims Mr. Widger. Not know the Clickets? Why, you are the very people of all others who ought to be their bosom friends. You are kindred beings. You are one, and the same thing. Not know the Clickets? Now will you know the Clickets? Will you make a point of knowing them? Will you meet them in a friendly way at our house one evening, and be acquainted with them? Apostrophe apostrophe Mrs. Jackson will be quite delighted. Nothing would give her more pleasure. Then, Lavinia, my darling, apostrophe says Mr. Widger, mind you don't lose sight of that. Now, pray take care that Mr. and Mrs. Jackson know the Clickets without loss of time. Such people ought not to be strangers to each other. Apostrophe Mrs. Widger books both families as the center of attraction for her next party, and Mr. Widger, going on to expatiate upon the virtues of the Clickets, adds to their other moral qualities that they keep one of the neatest phaetons in town, and have 2,000 a year. As the plausible couple never laud the merits of any absent person, without dexterously contriving that their praises shall reflect upon somebody who is present, so they never depreciate anything or anybody, without turning their depreciation to the same account. Their friend, Mr. Slummery, say they, is unquestionably a clever painter, and would no doubt be very popular, and sell his pictures at a very high price, if that cruel Mr. Feathers had not forestalled him in his department of art, and made it thoroughly and completely his own. Feathers, it is to be observed, being present and within hearing, and Slummery elsewhere. Is Mrs. Tablewick really as beautiful as people say? Why, there indeed you ask them a very puzzling question, because there is no doubt that she is a very charming woman, and they have long known her intimately. She is no doubt beautiful, very beautiful. They once thought her the most beautiful woman ever seen. Still, if you press them for an honest answer, they are bound to say that this was before they had ever seen our lovely friend on the sofa. The sofa is hard by, and our lovely friend can't help hearing the whispers in which this is said. Since that time, perhaps, they have been hardly fair judges. Mrs. Tablewick is no doubt extremely handsome, very like our friend, in fact, in the form of the features. But in point of expression, and soul, and figure, and air altogether, oh dear. But while the plausible couple depreciate, they are still careful to preserve their character for amiability and kind feeling. Indeed, the depreciation itself is often made to grow out of their excessive sympathy and goodwill. The plausible lady calls on the lady who dotes upon her children, and is sitting with a little girl upon her knee, enraptured by her artless replies, and protesting that there is nothing she delights in, so much as conversing with these fairies. When the other lady inquires if she has seen young Mrs. Finchin lately, and whether the baby has turned out a finer one than it promised to be. Oh dear! Apostrophe cries the plausible lady, you cannot think how often Bobtail and I have talked about poor Mrs. Finchin. She is such a dear soul, and was so anxious that the baby should be a fine child, and very naturally, because she was very much here at one time, and there is, you know, a natural emulation among mothers, that it is impossible to tell you how much we have felt for her. Apostrophe, is it weak or plain, or what? Apostrophe inquires the other. Weak or plain, my love? Apostrophe returns the plausible lady. It's a fright, a perfect little fright. You never saw such a miserable creature in all your days. Positively, you must not let her see one of these beautiful dears again, or you'll break her heart, you will indeed. Heaven bless this child, see how she is looking in my face. Can you conceive anything prettier than that? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.